Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. There is so much going on in the community of Astoria, Oregon, that today I have two shows in one. So I'll tell you about the second half first. The second half of the program will be with Dulcie Taylor. She's the president of the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association, and she'll be talking about Michelle Reeves' presentation tomorrow night at the PAC, also the Jane Barnes Review. So that's the second half of the program. And the first half of the program, that's where we are right now. In this segment of Talk of Our Towns, I have three amazing talents in the studio. I have Richard Rowland. He is the Clatsop Community College ceramics professor. Hi, Richard.
Hey there.
Very glad you're here today.
Thank you.
I also have two artists from the Portland area. I have Terry Inokuma. She is a potter. She likes to call herself a potter instead of a ceramicist, and we'll talk about why. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Donna.
We also have in the studio Grace Sanchez. She is a painter and collage artist, and there's a real bond between these two young women that we'll be exploring in the program. Hi, Grace.
Hi.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right. So the reason they're here in the studio is because tomorrow night, April 4th at 6 p.m., there is an opening reception for the Crane Crow Visual Arts Exhibit with both of their work on display. Richard Rowland, you organized this program. You curated it. Tell us why you chose these two artists.
Thank you, Donna. The reason I was able to bring in these artists is we have a teaching gallery at Clatsop Community College where the exhibit is going to open tomorrow night. And my job as a professional artist and an educator is to try to find the best artist I can find out there to help us grow and learn about cultural perspective and the visual arts. And both these artists are in their mid-career, I would say, and they're both from two worlds, from Japan and America. And I know that we need always cultural perspective and reinterpretation of the visual arts. And always my idea is to bring in the outside poet, if you will, to help inspire the local community. And secondary, it's my idea for them to meet my community here. And I think they're perfect. They have a wonderful show up there, and I'd like to invite everyone to come to it.
Absolutely. And so let's talk with each of you first. And I think, Grace, let's talk with you a little bit about Richard just referenced the fact that both of you and Terry, bridge two worlds, Japan and America. How did that happen for you?
Well, my mother is half Japanese. She was born and raised in Tokyo, Japan, and so my grandfather is Japanese heritage, and she was adopted by missionaries to Japan. She was an orphan, and she never came back. They came back, and she felt like she had found her true family in Japan and became a Japanese citizen. And when so she had kind of a taboo relationship at the mission with this Japanese young man, and they both went against custom and they married, which is just terribly unusual, you know, at the time in the 20s. And so they made a life for themselves there. And then World War II hit, and my grandmother was not deported, unlike most of the Anglos were all sent out.
But you grew up in, so you had that background, and
right.
You grew up in South Arkansas,
right,
with a Japanese mother.
Right, right. Yeah, and they had lived actually in Seattle when I was conceived, and she was 6 months pregnant, and they ended up hitting the road to find another place to live and ended up in Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
And that's where I was born. What happened in your household in Pine Bluff, Arkansas?
Well, it was very unusual. My dad was, he was an electrician, a minister, and a taxidermist. And so I grew up with, and my mother did Japanese calligraphy. And so I grew up with the visual of the Japanese language hanging on the walls and birds and animals in my home. And that was highly unusual. I didn't have the pink canopy bed. I had a player piano in my bedroom with a great horned owl on top and calligraphy. So I grew up with this language that I couldn't, that I wasn't taught, but I had the visual clues for. And my father, he actually, they were both very craft-oriented, and he took that calligraphy and he made it into copper. He made the pattern and he pounded copper, and that's what hung.
So you grew up in a household where there was art and there
yes.
was the Japanese beauty, the calligraphy
yes.
all around you.
Woodblock prints and, yeah.
And so you began creating at a young age.
I did.
And living
yeah.
this kind of little isolated world in
yeah.
your house in
the
Japan,
middle of,
in the middle
yeah,
of the South.
The southern city.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, and when I look at your work, I see color and I see, it just is fascinating. What mm-hmm. what is it that you feel inspires your work? You said there's a Japanese sensibility that you have. What? How does that come across in your work?
Well, I'm a large-scale figurative painter, and so I usually go into my other artist studios and we share models. And then what I do is I bring that painting into my studio and I'll put that painting across the studio and I'll make a tiny collage. And those collages are kind of inspired by Japanese prints and the way they're laid out. And so.
I like that you said when people look at your work, because I've just uh-huh. seen it online, and I know you have some new work that I haven't seen online, because I was
yes.
last night I was looking at your work and Terry's work online, that you see one world, and then you look and you
yeah.
see another world, and then behind that maybe even another
yes.
world.
Yes. And I feel like that when I began doing collage, I found that that was a language that I could do that in, that I couldn't necessarily access that with as much immediacy with paint that I could with assembling paper that had textures, that had windows, that had things that I could. And I kind of, the way I collage is sort of like painting. Rather than cutting out figures that are there, I use the texture and the color and layer mm-hmm. until. So I can go immediately and make a different room and another room behind a room. And when
exactly.
I do the collage, and it makes a lot of sense to me, because I feel like I was in a world behind a world. Like there are many worlds where I came from and with what I grew up in. So I feel like I'm fully expressing who I am now.
And there's a great sense of fun in your work and
yeah.
this color. It's
Thank
just
you.
Intriguing. It's very interesting, Grace,
Thank
really.
You.
I mean, it's just like, I want to know more. And I wish we had time to talk about the fact that you joined the Marine Corps to go to Japan. I mean, there's so much about you. So,
yeah.
But people can meet you and talk with you and ask you questions
Absolutely.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And you're doing a workshop from 12 to 3 tomorrow, which is free,
right.
At the college. And at the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Okay.
And now I think we need to move on to Terry Inokuma. And Terry, you said that rather than be called a ceramicist, you prefer the term potter. Why is that?
Well, I think people relate to the medium a little bit better when you mention potter as opposed to ceramicist. Sometimes I feel like this is a generalization, but I think people who are unfamiliar with clay, the medium, they might think of a ceramicist as being a little more on the, sculptural or highfalutin artist world, whereas potter is just, it's salt of the earth. It's very clear. I make utilitarian work. I don't, I'm not saying that I don't make sculptural work, but I think it's more of a familiar term.
One of the things that you said, and I want to say this sentence because it's so, to me, you can just see it in your work. You said, my cultural heritage has provided a foundation of aesthetic appreciation associated with nature's artistic canvas and its curious consistency showing beauty derived from imperfection, which is that Japanese term wabi-sabi, imperfectly perfect or perfectly imperfect. And when I look at your pots, I see movement. I see a sense of humor. I see a tilt. I see that wabi-sabi component. And you do that on purpose.
I do, yeah. When I first started making pots, it's on a wheel. I mean, you don't have to use a wheel, but that's one of the tools that potters have access to. And typically, it results in a round form. And I quickly wanted to alter these round, perfect forms. I think it was just, I didn't know that it was an inherent, you know, in my DNA exception of the Japanese culture of noticing that the pots that we use, my mom was cooking at home in clay pots on the stove, you know, like, who does that, right? And they're cracked, and but there's, you know, our rice was cooked in these pots. And so they all had these wonderful qualities of when you pick up a stone, it's not perfect. There's always little divots in it or little imperfections. And nature is that way. That's what makes us all unique, even as human beings, is that our shortcomings, our imperfections are what makes us beautiful. So the pots that I choose to make, you know, I say that I like to make utilitarian pots because I want people to use art on a daily basis, connect it to somebody, and stretch their aesthetic exception of what is beautiful to them. You know, in America, I feel like things have been supported in terms of perfection.
Sameness.
Yeah. Mm. Even palette. Mm-hmm. You know, so when the edges are just blurred a little bit in terms of exception visually, I think it affects you in a social way as well.
Well, I can't wait to get one of your pots and one of your cups, because I know that I will see that, and that will make me somehow appreciate that whole wabi-sabi concept of, you know, embracing that imperfection. Because there's so much fun. Both of you, your work is so fun. And you're doing a workshop. Your workshop is today from 1 to 4.
That's right.
It's a free workshop.
It is.
And how did you two collaborate? How did that come about?
Well, when I was asked to come do the show, immediately what came to mind was Grace and a conversation that we had had in Portland. So I had
Knew Grace. You knew each other before this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just knew each other because my friend Steve is her husband, who's a potter. And from going out to dinner occasionally, we'd have snippets of conversations over the last maybe 3 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, really very short conversations. But there was
but
one
intense connection.
Yeah. And then last year on my birthday, I got to spend a little bit more time with her and in the car. And there was one conversation that we had in particular that was about her grandmother that just struck me so deeply. And so when I was on the phone with Richard, just without even thinking, I had no plans at the time, but on the phone, literally, it just came out of me. I said, could it be a two-person show? I'd like to include somebody who's a 2D artist, Grace Sanchez. I just received her postcard for a show she had up at her gallery that she manages in Portland, and that was the first time I'd seen her work, was
really?
From that postcard.
Oh my God.
So, sight unseen, it was just an instinctual thing. That.
So both of you share that cultural, that link of navigating, coming in these, you know, being brought up
in
these families.
My upbringing, you know, my dad was actually born in Sacramento, but then was raised in Japan, came back and was put into the internment camps. And then my mom was born in northern Tokyo as well and grew up there. But we have a half-sister in Japan that we don't even know. And then she was brought over to marry my dad after he came out of the internment camps and lost his first wife. And so both of them had very difficult, you know, lives. And so he was very protective. And while Grace was in a state that was hard to live as a dual cultural, you know, family, I was confined in my own home. So that was my little world, and that's why
art has been the way you've expressed this rich, diverse upbringing that you've had,
mm-hmm. and to make sense of it.
That's what you said too, Grace.
Trying to
this art is making sense of these two worlds, which are so different, and yet meld and works together so beautifully in your work. We just have a minute left. Any last thing that you all want to say? I know that you will talk with people when they come to the reception tomorrow night, which starts at 6. It's like 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And
Well, we just have appreciated having this opportunity to do a collaborative show. So thank you, Richard, for having us. It's really stretched ourselves in terms
Definitely.
Of what we've done with our work and how we process. So,
well, and we feel like this is just a beginning of a process. You know, there's a lot of exhibitions where there's a collaboration and the exhibition itself is the end. And we feel like this is the beginning.
Oh, the beginning yeah. here, it, right it here in Astoria Classic Community
That's
College.
Right.
Richard,
right.
look what you've done.
So true. When beginning. You see the work, when you come to see the work, please keep that in mind that it is just the beginning.
And the public can engage. And if they come, they'll understand how they can actually engage in the work.
Yeah, and please ask us questions.
You definitely want to take advantage of this. If you would like to do a free workshop with Terry Inokuma today, ceramics pottery, that's from 1 to 4 at the college. It's free. Richard, I assume people can just go on the website, the Clatsop Community College website, and find out information about this?
Or call? I'd recommend they just come.
Just come. Yeah. Just come. 1 o'clock today, show up for Terry's workshop. You will be happy that you did. And then tomorrow, Grace Sanchez is doing one from 12 to 3. And of course, tomorrow night you want to make that reception from 6 to 9 p.m. To meet both of these artists. And Richard, any last thing you'd like to say?
Well, you know, I feel fortunate to be here in Astoria. And I feel like these two artists have created a moment in time that we can all look and learn from. And anyway... I think
Definitely
you need to come and look at the work.
Come and see the work. It's really phenomenal. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
And I will
us.
See you tomorrow at the reception. Excellent. And I'm looking forward to having some of your
Yay.
Pieces
Thanks
in my life.
Thanks, Astoria, for having
thank
us.
You.
Thank
All
you.
All right, thank you so
Terrific.
Much, Richard. Okay, we're going to let them go now and pop off to their busy day that they have. And again, Clatsop Community College tomorrow night, the Crane Crow Visual Arts at the college, and we will see you all there. And then again, the free workshops. Thank you so much, Richard, for doing this. And now we're going to actually switch topics here to talk with Dulcie Taylor. Dulcie is she's going to tell us a little bit about herself. But most people know Dulcie. I was telling her earlier that when the Mayor Willis Van Dusen talks about Dulcie, he says, when you think of Dulcie Taylor, you just think of one word, and that is fun. And is your microphone on?
I don't know.
Yeah. Terry, her microphone's on. She's here. Dulcie Taylor, tell us what you do. Tell us about a few things about what you do and what the Downtown Association is.
Well, I am a business owner in downtown Astoria. I own Old Town Framing Company at 1287 Commercial.
And artists love that. Love your
Yeah. We have some fun
business.
There and make beauty and memories. And then I'm the president of the Downtown Association, the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association, the ADHDA. We didn't pick the name. Right now we are doing a lot of things right, maybe. We are hoping. And we'll find out what we're doing right tomorrow evening.
And, you know, here's the thing. I just was talking, of course, with Richard and Terry and Grace mm-hmm. about their opening tomorrow night from 6 to 9. People can go to your event, which is tomorrow night as well, but that's at 5:45 at the Performing Arts Center, and that's only going to last probably for an hour or two, a couple of hours, and then you can pop right up to the college. You're already out, and you can go up to the reception. So you can do both things tomorrow night.
Yeah.
But what's happening tomorrow night at the Performing Arts Center?
So for the last, I'm going to say 8 months, because I know Michelle's been lurking around Astoria for longer than we have hired her for, so I'm going to say 8 months. Michelle Reeves, a urban strategist, has been coming to Astoria, looking at how Astoria works in regards to parking and traffic flow and streetscape and street dialogue and all kinds of things. So tomorrow night we have an event which will be the culmination of her findings and her recommendations on what might the story of Astoria be, the story of Astoria. Stories are very important, according to Michelle, which I totally understand. We talk about the story of Astoria all the time. And what factors might help us with some economic growth in downtown and how we can leverage the unique assets of Astoria to make us even more cool and wonderful.
And I know you mentioned earlier that it's not just downtown a story, because it's there are these gateways you talk about. It's
right.
What and I think what she says is, whether you realize it or not, your business is telling a story. Your town is telling a story.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how you enter and exit that town affects, are you going to stay? Are you going to be there? Or
right.
Are you going to go
drive
through?
Are you encouraged to continue to come into Astoria from any direction, that from across the bridge, 26, 30, whatever direction? So immediately when people are, like, for instance, Cannon Beach is like the most well-known name of a town on the coast. But really we know in Astoria that Astoria is cooler than Cannon Beach. Well, in my opinion, in my humble opinion.
There are different kinds of cool, and what Astoria has is so much happening all the time.
Right, but we don't have that name recognition. So if people go to Cannon Beach and they're heading out on Highway 30 and they hit a spot where they decide whether they're going to go across the bridge to Washington or come into Astoria because Astoria is enticing them to come in, do they do that?
So Michelle Reeves, who is just absolutely brilliant and smart and witty and funny and really doesn't miss a thing, she has right. been working, the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association, ADHDA, you were very smart to hire her to come in to make this assessment of how is downtown doing, what does it need. So tomorrow night at 5:45 at the Performing Arts Center, Michelle Reeves will present her findings
yes.
to the public.
Yes.
Anyone, it's free, it's open to the public. And there will be some time to ask questions.
Yes.
And then what will happen after that presentation?
After that, Sherry Stewart from the Oregon Main Street will also be doing a presentation. And she has done a capacity assessment of our organization to see whether we can handle Michelle's recommendations. And so we will look at our capacity assessment. We will evaluate the recommendations that Michelle gives us. We'll prioritize. We'll partner with our partners. We partner with the city and the Sunday Market, Pacific Power. We'll partner with the entities that will help us achieve our goals.
Excellent. So that's a wonderful thing to participate in. If you live in this area, you want to know about what we're currently doing and what could be done to improve things.
Right. And that's 5:45 at the PAC. The doors open at 5:30.
Excellent.
At the PAC on 16th and Exchange.
Yes. Performing Arts Center.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a question and answer period after Michelle's and Sherry speaking.
And that's just one of the wonderful things that the ADHDA is doing under Dulcie's capable leadership. You also are doing something else that's going to be quite fun on Saturday night. What are you doing that's a fundraiser for ADHDA?
Nothing.
Nothing? Nothing's happening on Saturday
no.
night?
No. This is the third year we're putting on the Jane Barnes Review. Some people wonder, I assume that everybody in Astoria knows who Jane Barnes is, but that's not exactly true.
No, let's tell right. people. Who is
Jane Barnes? Well, my story is that Jane Barnes was the first white woman of Astoria. So a couple years ago, in celebration of her and the bicentennial, actually, we had the Bicentennial Review and Jane Barnes cat dance. So I just modified that into the Jane Barnes Review, and it was hugely successful the first year we did it. We won an award from the Oregon Main Street organization for a great event and fundraiser. So what we do is we put, this year we put 18 guys on, we dress them up in women's clothing and put some wigs and makeup on them. You can hardly recognize them at all.
I went last year. They are stunning. And these are iconic figures of Astoria. I mean, Pete Gimray was incredible last year.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, my gosh. So these are local people you would recognize. These are hot bananas in
these
our area.
These are local guys, local businessmen, local, all locals. Yeah.
And they do, and they sing, they dance, they...
Well, they sort of... Pete sang, and they kind of dance, but yeah.
Okay. It's definitely a not to be missed experience. There's
right.
no question about that. You want to get your tickets early. How do people even get how do people get tickets for this?
Well, here's the deal. Tickets, you can get tickets at Old Town Framing at 1287 Commercial Street, or you can get them at Gamer's Shoes, and Pete might show you a picture of him dressed up last year because he likes to do that, but he's not participating this year. You can also get tickets at the door. We like cash or credit card at the two stores that you can get tickets, but you can pay by credit card at the door.
Okay.
April 6th, doors open at 7.
Saturday night,
This Saturday night, tickets are $25 and $50. It is a fundraiser for the Downtown Association. So basically, we try to have fundraisers to make money to do the things that Michelle tells us to.
That's right. And what a fun way to do it. I mean, people were laughing. They were hilarious. Last year it was hilarious.
I call it ridiculously funny. It is these guys are so generous with us dressing them up, and I drag them into the basement of my store, and they try on dresses and scream at me from the basement to come and help them zip up their dress.
You know what? In this world where the news is so grim so often, we need to do things that are fun and silly.
Yeah.
And this is not only fun and silly. It's a great evening out with your girlfriend, with your husband, with your wife. It's a great evening out, but it's also a benefit for our downtown, which is fantastic.
You know, the other thing, Donna, is that it's a huge community thing, and that's one thing I like to talk about, is that we have hair salons donating their space and decorating, guys. We have a bunch of clothing stores donating clothes. We have what I call the Jane Wranglers, who dress and adorn the Gentleman Janes, as I like to call them. We have all these volunteers that are decorating. It's like a huge, the Astor City Opera Company Playhouse donates their space to us. So it's like a huge, it benefits the Downtown Association, but it's everyone, it's a community thing, I think.
Yeah, it's a celebration. It's, yeah. And it's really, it's just once a year. And so really, if you are in town and you can make this event, or even if you're out of town, it's absolutely worthwhile. It's fabulous. It's so much fun. So that Saturday night, the doors open at 7 at the Astor Street Opera Company right on Bond Street. Mm-hmm. And the show starts at 7:30, and laughter is healing. Not only is it a benefit for downtown, but it is it's a health and wellness kind of thing, because you laugh. And how often are we belly laughing?
People are belly laughing so much that they are in pain the next day.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
And this year, we have the added feature of, we sometimes dress up some of our women as men, like I typically dress as a man. But this year we've got, my Wranglers are all women dressed as men. It's going to be pretty dang funny.
All right. Way cool. Thank you so much, Dulcie. So now we just have a minute or two left to tell people that we have all these incredible events happening over the next few days. So today at the college, a workshop with Terry Inokuma. She's a potter, and that's going to be free from 1 to 4 p.m. Tomorrow, you have Grace Sanchez doing a workshop from 12 to 3 at the college. She's a painter and collage artist. And then tomorrow night is their opening reception at 6 p.m., but it goes on till 9. So what you can do is you can go to the Michelle Reeves presentation at the Performing Arts Center at 5:45. And be there for the Downtown Association's presentation there. And then you can pop up the hill and go to the reception for the artists. And then on Saturday night, you only have to do one thing, and that's show up at the Astor Street Opera Company.
Yep.
Right? We got that all done?
Yeah, I think that sounds all
good. Okay. So there's a lot of fun in your future here in the next few days. So thank you so much, Dulcie.
Thank you.
For all the good things you do. And I want to thank our engineer extraordinaire, Terry Wilson. Thank you so much, Terry. And also local talented banjo instructor Michael Brun for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude, focus on all the good things in your life, on feeling good, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being wabi-sabi, for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can right now in this moment, the only moment which exists on the amazing planet we call Earth.
I'm looking at the brochure for that thing, and I don't see any guys dressed as girls that have beards.